right, dollars, time to quit goofing off and time to get this podcast rolling again. This is Zach Austin, and I'm your host of the Dollars Gang podcast. My apologies for not recording anything for the last 7 months, but we are back at it and ready to roll. It's Final Four time in March Madness. And that having been said, we have a guy coming on that knows a lot about college basketball coming up next on your Dollars Gang podcast. That's coming up next. Welcome back to the Dollars Gang podcast. It is March Madness. Can you believe it? The Final Four. We're down to the Final Four now, and joining me right now, we have a guy. We can talk about guys all day. I got a guy right here that he knows his college basketball. Trust me, folks. This episode of the Dollars Gang podcast is brought to you by Dead Fish Films 1. There are a lot of good things to do in Montana, such as ride bike, shoot ball, kick ball, swing bat, maybe hit ball. Unfortunately, we cannot do any activities outside because it's raining. Good luck tomorrow. That having been said, we welcome a guy. You can call him Coulter Rothstein. You can call him John Rothstein. You can call him Dead Fish Films 1. You can call him Coulters. But for now, we'll just call him Coulter Olmstead. Coulter, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm good. Thanks for the blast from the past. That was a funny video. I forgot about those days.
Yeah, like, now, before I get started, man, you got to find that hard drive. Man, you said you lost that hard drive from that video, didn't you?
I think I have the video somewhere on archive drive. I'll have to look back. I'm pretty sure I still have the video.
Okay. Anyway, UConn's in the Final Four, both guys and gals. How about that? We'll have to see if they can make it their third double national title in our lifetimes.
Yep, and it's kind of crazy how the last two times were 10 years apart, and 10 years is this one, and so last two times they both won it, so might be a decade reoccurrence for them. That'd be cool.
Yeah, you got to think that, right? And before I get into, like, the main questions, NC State in the Final Four for the first time since that Miracle 83 team that defeated Houston in the Jim Valvano era, eh?
Yeah, I don't know if we call them a Cinderella seed since they're from a power conference that they used to see.
Yeah, what seed were they?
They're an 11 seed, so I guess, you know, by seeding, they're a Cinderella team, but kind of crazy how, you know, 3 weeks ago they made a banked buzzer-beater three-pointer versus Virginia in the ACC tournament and haven't looked back.
And
it's been quite a run.
In an unlikely occurrence, Virginia barely made the tournament.
Right, and then they got ousted in the first game, so.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
Pretty cool to see. I think four of the Elite Eight teams were, or three of the Elite Eight teams were ACC teams and four in the Sweet 16. So yeah. ACC, even though they were, you know, maybe considered a lesser strong conference than usual, they definitely shown it in the tournament.
Yeah, and Virginia, like, we talk about Virginia, like, several years ago they lost to the 16 seed. The next year they beat the 16 seed en route to the title. This year, they were the 16 seed.
Yeah, I think that they might have been like a 10 seed, but yeah. Well, Purdue's kind of facing the same thing, but they're on their redemption tour and they're looking real good too. So, like, you know, maybe they'll have the same situation that Virginia did.
And here's the thing about it. Like, what's the difference? Get your take on this. What's the difference between a 10 seed and a 16 seed? Like, 10 seed, you eat, like, why is it? It's the 10 seeds that get the first four game, yet there are teams ranked lower than them. 11 seed, 12 seeds. Seems like 10 seeds as well. I've, like, 16 seeds are understandable. 10's not too much as far as first four games, like last teams to get into the tournament go.
Right, yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with just, you know, when they look at the BPI and the strength of schedule, a lot of these smaller conferences, they don't get the luxury of playing, you know, ranked teams out of conference, and so they really have to rely on making the conference by the automatic bid, where, you know, a team like Virginia gets a lot of opportunities to play quad one and quad two games. And even though they might do a little bit worse, they might still be a higher seed just because of the quality of their competition that they have throughout the whole year.
Speaking of 10 seeds, I know a 10 seed that they didn't even have to play a first four game, but they still – I got to ask you this. What happened to my Nevada Wolfpack this year in this their first tournament game, man?
Yeah, they were looking really good until about, what, the 5 or 6 minute mark, and then they kind of just the shots stopped falling, and Dayton stormed back. That was kind of a bummer because I liked that Nevada team, and I thought they would have matched up well versus Arizona in the second round. They'll be good next year, though.
Yeah, they got my good friend Nick Davidson coming back.
Nice.
Yeah, that kind of brings me to my next point. Now, the Cats, they were a 16 seed via winning their Big Sky Conference tournament, like, the first four game. Now, I wouldn't say they kind of fell apart as much, but they did kind of have a second-half lead and then lost their game in overtime, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, and Grambling and them, that was a pretty fun game, went into overtime and stuff, but... you know, all said and done, I think Montana State overachieved a lot this year. You know, with the turnover they had and the new coach coming in after Danny Sprinkle left. You know, they were projected, I think, 10th or 9th in the conference. They finished 4th or 5th, and then they win the conference as a 5 seed. And so, yeah, they flat out overachieved this year, and just to make the tournament, I think, is a big win.
Yeah.
But I think they got a lot of upside going into next year, and as far as the Big Sky goes, I think they're going to be at the top of the conference again next year.
Yeah, and it certainly helps that Matt Logie turns down a contract that would have made him the second Bobcat coach in as many years that would have currently held a job at a D1 school in Washington.
Yep, yeah, it was cool to see his contract extension, and I saw a couple of the recruits he's getting in, and hopefully he can get some transfer portal guys, but they had a young team coming in, and so they have a lot coming back potentially, and they should be pretty good next year.
Definitely, and speaking of the Cats, that'll bring me to my next question. Danny Sprinkle leaves Utah State after one season in which he completely turns the program around, didn't return a single point from the previous year, got him to the NCAA tournament and arguably one of the better seasons the program has ever had. And now that season was the catalyst, even though he was only there 1 year. It got him those big bucks up there in Seattle, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what he did, I think, is it went under the national radar a little bit with what you just said and not bringing any points back and winning your conference and then winning the game in the tournament for the first time. I think Utah State has won a conference game in a long time. And so I'm absolutely stoked that he's back. You know, I know Utah's kind of the Northwest, but it'll be cool to see him in Washington with a lot more NIL budget. And, you know, and now with them going to the Big Ten, he'll get a lot more access to bigger recruits, and I think him and his coaching staff are going to do a good job at Washington.
Yeah, and say, you'll probably know this one. What's the farthest Utah State has ever been? Like, have they ever been in the Sweet 16, Elite 8, under Stu Morrow, any other coach? Like, did they ever get very far with Wayne Estes or J.C. Carroll playing for them?
You know, I think they said that the last time they won a game in the tournament was like the late 90s or early 2000s.
Even a tournament game.
Yeah, so I don't know if they've ever made the Sweet 16 or anything like that. They historically have been really good, kind of like what Gonzaga has done, at, you know, in their conference and stuff. And then they just kind of never had success in the tournament. But it's cool for Danny to do that in year one.
Definitely, and you brought up Gonzaga. Now, WCC, like, they don't get as many NCAA tournament bids. Like, I think they get two or three, depending on the year, if I'm correct on that. But Gonzaga, being the team they are, they're probably the team in that conference that's going to get the most quad one opportunities. And obviously, I think they lost in, was it the Elite Eight? They lost in Sweet 16, probably.
Yep. They lost to Purdue in the Sweet 16, yeah.
Gotcha.
And they, you know, they, Mark Few, he does a good job scheduling out a conference there. You know, they played a bunch, you know, I think they played Kentucky, Alabama, UConn out of conference. And so, yeah, they do a good job making up for their, you know, not as foolproof conference strength-wise by scheduling a lot of games out of conference usually.
Oh, yeah, and yeah, now that we're in the Final Four and, you know, you brought up Purdue and UConn. Like I said this to start the recording. Can UConn, well, guys are more so the favorites than the gals are, but can UConn make it a double national championship for the third time in program history?
Yeah, like, I mean, the girls' team is a lot riding against them. They got to go through Iowa and then potentially South Carolina or NC State, which are all gauntlet games for how lack the, you know, they have so many injuries. I think they only have seven scholarship players right now able to play. So they definitely have the uphill climb this year versus the guys. I think, you know, the guys have a pretty, I think, pretty good matchup versus Alabama. You know, Alabama can get hot from the three-point line, so anything is possible against them. But, you know, I think that UConn-Purdue would be the game everyone would want to see. Klingon versus Edie seems like an awesome matchup. And, you know, with all the stuff that Purdue had last year was getting upset and their redemption mission, and then UConn trying to go back-to-back. There's a lot of cool storylines in the Final Four this year.
Oh, yeah, like, one that I could definitely bring up is we talk about Purdue, and if I'm correct, this is their first Final Four since 1980. If there's any year they should have made it would have been 2019 when Carson Edwards just went off and arguably had the best NCAA tournament game that anyone's ever had. And I believe that was an Elite Eight game against Virginia.
Yep, I think that's when he tied the record for threes in a game too, and just didn't have enough. But yeah, they've been a quality team the, you know, the last 5 years or so, and just had unfortunate games. I think they've been upset by a 13, 14, 15, and 16 seed in the last, like, 7 years. So they've had a rough stretch, but this year they're silencing all the doubters.
Oh, yeah, and earlier we talked about UConn women and saying that they got to play Iowa here in a Final Four game here. I'll be honest, Iowa, UConn. UConn's obviously the most consistent program, obviously, storied program, obviously, but I did not think when Paige Bueckers first entered the national stage as a UConn Husky, I did not think that anybody would – I did not think – I'm pretty sure she was a national player the year as a freshman, but I did not think that there would be another – player who would, at the same time, who would be better than her in college basketball.
Yeah, I mean, that her and Caitlin Clark, and you know, they're the games last night, you know, Angel Reese is really good for LSU, and Juju Watkins, she's not a senior, but the girls game has arguably bigger names than the guys game right now, which I think is so awesome, and just the matchups in the Elite Eight and then these matchups in the Final Four are crazy good with the star talent that they have, and it's really cool to see like how good that class was, because all these seniors are showing out, and you know, Paige Bueckers has been carrying her team all year, as Caitlin Clark has as well, and It should be an awesome game. As the, you know, LSU and Iowa was one of the best games I've watched all year, regardless of guys or girls basketball. And the UConn-USC game as well was also super, super competitive game down to the wire. So I'm really excited for both Final Four games for both the guys and the girls this year. It should be fun to watch.
Yeah, and in terms of star talent between two teams, I know Washington and UConn didn't wind up playing each other in 2017 in the tournament, I don't think. But I got to say, there had to have been the same type of star talent, because you had Kelsey Plum and Brianna Stewart playing for their respective teams at the same time, even though I don't think they wound up playing each other at any point.
Yeah, I don't believe so, but yeah, I mean, you got two of the biggest names in the sport going against each other to get to the national championship. I think that's, you know, all the reporters and analysts would dream of writing that scenario, and we get to see it on Friday and Saturday, or Friday and Sunday. I think the national championship for the girls is on Sunday, so should be fun. But you know, either of those, whoever wins that game has a potential mega climb. That South Carolina team, I'm not saying NC State can't beat them, but South Carolina is super good, and so they're going into a gauntlet regardless in the championship, so it should be fun.
You got to think, South Carolina being the favorite, but...
Yeah, I mean, they haven't lost all year, so...
Undefeated, eh?
Yeah.
We'll see if the winner of UConn versus Iowa can change that. Exactly. You got to think, Iowa's got to be in the running to win their first ever national title. It'd be nice seeing a first in there.
You know, even as a UConn fan and wanting them to both win, I think seeing Caitlin Clark go out on top would be really cool to see. That'd be an awesome storyline.
Yeah. Absolutely was, and you know, over to the guys bracket now. There wasn't really any upsets this year, to be honest with you. I mean, I think Kentucky was a 3 seed losing to a 14 seed, but other than that, this was not really an upset late in year in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, you know, we had Kentucky in Oakland, and then Yale beat Auburn. But yeah, really, other than that, you know, I think we had a 12 seed beat a 5 seed, I think. The way the Grand Canyon beat St. Mary's, yeah. But yeah, I'm pretty chalked this year. I was kind of surprised that some of the teams that I had picked for upsets didn't really show up, and then, you know, I guess we had NC State roll in through the tournament, but even them, I don't really count as a Cinderella because they're from a power conference, regardless if they're an 11 seed. But I think on the other side, it has created some really good games. You know, both Illinois, you know, Illinois Iowa State was super good. Houston Duke was really good. Alabama, North Carolina, Clemson, Arizona, like all the Sweet 16 games were so fun to watch. You know, I would say other than UConn, it's good for UConn fans watching them win by 30, but I think everyone else is kind of gets bored of a team putting up 30 rather than a close game. So I think that the Final Four games are pretty good matchups, and I think, you know, NC State's got a lot to do, a lot to deal with Purdue. You know, ED is no easy task, but they do have 3 really good bigs, so they have bodies to throw at them at least. So I think that there's at least some chance. And I honestly, I'm so excited to watch both of these games live in Arizona in a couple days.
Definitely, and what do you expect to happen? We haven't even talked about this yet. On Saturday, what do you expect to see? You're going to the Final Four, right?
I will be there, yeah.
For both the semis and championship game, right?
Yep, correct.
Yeah, and the other semi, your UConn boys, Dan Hurley, the Carpenter, what do you expect to see on Saturday against Basketball School Alabama?
Basketball School Alabama. And the thing is, I really like Nate Oates. You know, he does that NBA style where it's threes and layups, and so they can really score the basketball. I think right now, via KenPom, it's like the number one. I think when they played Illinois last week, it was the number one and number two offensive efficiency teams, and I think Alabama's three. So it should be fireworks, honestly. I think that Alabama's defense is a little bit iffy, so I think, you know, the fact that UConn has been playing so well on the defensive end and can get some stops versus Alabama, I think that'll help them in the long run. And I think UConn will just wear them down eventually. I don't think that Alabama has the defense to keep up with UConn, and UConn's offense can definitely stay with Alabama's offense. So we could see a shootout if Alabama's connecting with threes and stuff, and that would be fun to watch. But I kind of see a similar game to the Illinois Connecticut game, where if the shots aren't falling for Alabama, it could get ugly pretty fast with how bad their defense is at times.
Definitely, and you got to think, I would have even thought early in the year that they're a four seed, but. And I don't remember the last time Alabama made it this far, but you had to think, even coming into the year, that Alabama was going to be one of your dark horses. And now here they are.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Sears, their point guard, is an absolute stud. I really like Grant Nelson, the transfer from North Dakota State. They run and they shoot threes. They're fun to watch. It's really cool to see them make it to their first Final Four. And I kind of like, I don't know if you know the storylines, but Nate Oates was an assistant coach for Danny Hurley's brother, Bobby, when he was at Buffalo before he...
Oh, Buffalo's where Bobby Hurley was the coach. I knew he was a coach now that I think about it, but Buffalo's where he was coaching at.
Yep, and Nate Oates took over after... Bobby went to Arizona State before he got there. Alabama job. So there's a cool little storyline there.
Oh, yeah.
Nate Oates is one of my favorite coaches, so I'm really excited to be able to watch him battle Dan Hurley.
Nate Oates, my cousin Vinny.
Yeah.
And other NCAA tournament stuff. Going back early to the tournament, we brought up Washington State earlier. A job that Matt Logie turns down so that he could accept a contract extension with the Cats. Washington State, so their coaching vacancy must be open, but as we just found out, obviously, they made their first NCAA tournament since 2008, according to John Rothstein, and to my knowledge, they won a game in the NCAA tournament. Now, like, before we talk about that, was Klay Thompson on that 2008 team that made the tournament run?
I'm not sure. I think he got drafted in 2011, so he would have been a freshman probably.
So, very possible.
Yes, very possible. And that was, he's the last person from Washington State that I can think of that was like a solid NBA player from Washington State. So if I had to put money on it, I would say he was probably on one of those teams that made it back in 08. So,
and
cool to see.
The other school that Mr. Sprinkle is coaching at right now, obviously, highest player they ever had get drafted was Markel Fultz back in 2017, but injuries have kind of taken that over a little bit. But who else? Who's the last decent NBA player that had an okay career that you can think of that came from UW?
I mean, probably Isaiah Thomas is the biggest.
Oh, that's what's up. I forgot about him. He hit the step back to, like, win a conference tournament game.
Yep, and then Brandon Roy was a stud when he was at Washington in the late 2000s. I think he played, they made the Elite Eight the year, one of the years Florida won. And I think Florida beat him, or maybe Ohio State beat him, I can't remember. But he was pretty good back in the day. They've had a lot of, like, one-and-done guys recently. You know, Marquise Chris, Isaiah Stewart, Markel Fultz. So they've had some talent. They just haven't been able to put it together super recently. But I think the way that Danny coaches with and the way he recruits – and gets guys invested in the style of play, I think he'll be able to really succeed in the Big Ten. I think he'll probably be able to bring a couple Utah State guys with him. So maybe if he can bring Gray Osabor and some of those guys that are still eligible over, that'd be pretty cool.
Darius Brown.
Yeah, I think Darius was a lot. He's done with his eligibility, but
okay, is he done?
Yeah, I think he was a fifth-year senior. So.
Okay.
But Osabor is a junior. Yeah, and a couple of those other guys that they had, Martinez, he was a junior as well. So maybe he could pull a couple of those guys over, but we'll see. The transfer portal is buzzing already, and there's plenty of people out there. If Washington's willing to put some NIL money, I think Danny could go get some guys right away.
Yeah, and speaking of which, how about Osabor? Sixth man of the year in the Big Sky Conference to
player of the year
in the Mountain West Conference. So we easily, that means he has to be easily the most improved player in the whole country as far as that goes. If you're going from like sixth man of the year to, in a one bid league to player of the year in a league that takes six teams to the NCAA tournament, which is by far the most ever for a Mountain West team.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, he would definitely be on that first team of most improved players. He was I'm stealing this from one of the commentators on the Mountain West. He hasn't been good. He's been great. Pun there. But, yeah, he was fun to watch this year, and I think he's only going to continue to get better as he evolves because he's still learning the game, and he's got a lot of skill. I mean, he was in that first half of that Purdue game before it got away from him. He was actually, you know, taking it too easy a little bit before he got in foul trouble. So I think he's got a lot of upside still, and wherever he ends up playing next year, he's going to be a wrecking ball.
Yeah, and next question I have is, obviously, we talked about – I wonder which Carolina school it is playing in the Final Four this weekend, and we would have said the same thing back in 83, but brings me to another point. A couple different things we could talk about is neither Carolina or Duke is in the Final Four this year, and I would think it was the same thing last year, but it doesn't happen very often that you see Duke and Carolina not in the Final Four. And you see another certain Carolina school in the ACC in the Final Four.
Right, yeah. I mean, other than Virginia, it's really, really been Duke and North Carolina are the ACC teams that are thriving. So it's cool to see, you know, and see, I think last year, obviously, Miami was in the Final Four, in the Final Fours. But it's cool to see ACC showing out because they've kind of been the butt of everyone's joke, talking about them being the down conference this year, and they end up being the conference with the most teams going the deepest. So, you know, I mean, it's a tough tournament. You got to win six games in a row to win it all, and you catch a team that's on fire one night, and it can be the end. No matter how good you are, because that's just the name of the game. I think it, you know, if you look at Oakland versus Kentucky, if it was a seven-game series in the NBA playoff style, you know, Kentucky's probably winning that 4-1. But that's not how the tournament is, and that's why March Madness is so fun to watch.
Oh yeah, and There's a couple things we got to settle once and for all is, first question here is, you probably agree on this, keep the NCAA tournament at 64 teams, and as John Rothstein would say, do not even look at expanding the tournament under any circumstances.
Yeah, I'm definitely on the side of keeping it, 68. I think even at times the 10, 11, 12 playing games seem kind of nonsensical to me. So I think if you're gonna expand it anymore, it's purely for a NCAA financial thing. And the cool thing about the NCAA tournament is like it's hard to get into. There's close to 400 Division I teams, and only 68 get in. And if they expand it to, I've heard 78, I've heard 96, I've heard 120, it's like a lot of these teams could go under 500 in their conference and in a power conference like the Big Ten or the SEC and still make the tournament where, look at Virginia this year, like they were the last team in and they got spanked in the playing game, probably shouldn't even been in and could have gave a team with, maybe less quad one wins like Indiana State or Seton Hall or St. John's an opportunity and they probably could have competed a little bit better. But I'm definitely on the side of keeping it where it's at because I think that it's a pretty perfect layout right now.
Yeah, and you just brought up Indiana State. You got to love it. Indiana State Sycamores. That reminds me of a certain high school football team, Sycamore. If you get the reference on that.
I did not. What is that?
Oh, reference? Bishop Sycamore is.
Oh, the fake high school. Is that it? Yeah. Okay. I was way late on that train. Yeah. I saw that 6 months ago.
The only Sycamore that's a real school is Indiana State.
Yeah, exactly. Home of Larry Bird.
And I don't even think have they been to the tournament since that 1979 season?
I have no idea. They didn't make it this year, I guess. So whatever streak they're on is still there. But hopefully next year they'll have a chance. Now that DeVries is not at Drake, so. That's been their kryptonite the last few years is Drake.
Speaking of which, Coulter, I say this to you, and I say this to everyone listening to this, I highly recommend the documentary BS High. My buddy Tyler and I watched it not too long ago.
Is it out? I've been waiting to watch it, so I'll check it out.
It's about a coach who exploits kids, who grabs kids and takes their money.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, you should. I don't know how much it costs, but I think you can find it on YouTube, though.
Okay.
Yeah, but something else we have to settle, and it'd certainly be easy for a UConn fan to agree with me on this one. UConn is a blue blood in every which way on both the guys and the girls' side, even on the guys' side.
I'm going to be biased because I am a UConn fan, but I mean, the only argument that people could make is like, historically, if you go 50 years, is UConn a blue blood? I guess, for 25 of those years, they were kind of irrelevant until the 90s. So, but if you go the last 25 years, UConn's won the most national championships on either side. So, I would say that they're a blue blood. They compare, they say Michigan State is a blue blood, and they've kind of had a similar longevity of success since the 90s. And so, they definitely in the 80s were good for a while when they had Magic and stuff like that, but they've had their down years as well. And you look at some of the actual blue bloods now that are, UCLA struggled for the last couple years.
Oh yeah, since the one time since the 70s, and you take a look at it, the success for the likes of Duke and Carolina don't stretch back like before the Coach K era, or even the Roy Williams, or even the Dean Smith era, because I believe, if I'm correct, 82 was the first North Carolina national championship, and obviously 91, Mike Krzyzewski's 12th year, was Duke's first ever title.
Yeah.
So you got to think.
I was going to say, if you take it from that point in time, you know, I think UConn's resume holds up as much as any of those other schools. I'm gonna say that they are blue blood. If they win now, their argument is pretty solidified.
Definitely.
6 championships in the last 30 years is pretty impressive. So.
And considering Duke never won their first title since 91 and 82 for Carolina, obviously, we can say a number of schools such as UCLA have been blue bloods forever.
Right, yeah, but I mean, really, Kansas, UCLA, back that far, there's not many other schools that have had that much success for that long, so, kind of hard to do, but, if you go modern Blue Bloods, I would put them right up there with any other school.
And, gotta say, for a short time with Joakim Noah, those Florida Gators, for a very short time in the 2000s, could stake their claim as a blue blood, having won back-to-back in 06 and 07.
Yep. The whole Billy Donovan era was pretty successful until he moved to the NBA. So, you could short stint them. And, I mean, Villanova had a good run in the 2010s.
So, they should have an argument themselves, because two titles in 16 and 18 respectively and 1985. So, three titles, but that success as one of the better schools in college basketball goes back quite a while.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah. It's an interesting argument, and just kind of depends on who you're talking to.
Yeah, Villanova in the tournament this year or no?
They did not make it, no.
Wow. Must be the first time in a hot minute.
Yeah, I think I don't know if they made it last year, but yeah, they're 2 years under their, since Jay Wright retired with Kyle Neptune, have not been bright years, but I think that they're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, anyway, so is this the first time you've ever been to the Final Four or live, or have you been before?
No, I've been to the first round of March Madness. I went to Spokane Regional in like 2010, so it's been a while since I've been to the tournament. Yeah, first time going to the Final Four, and me and my buddy just bought tickets because it's in Phoenix, and fortunate enough, I get to watch my favorite team play in the Final Four, so kind of check two bucket list items off at once.
Oh, yeah, that's a bucket list item I need to check off my list, so... Yeah, so 2010, that would have been the year Duke won. And obviously 2011 was UConn.
Yep, yeah, so I got to see Draymond versus Grievous Vasquez, if anyone remembers him from Maryland.
Well, Maryland against Michigan State.
Yeah, and it was like one of the big buzzer beaters of the tournament, so that was pretty awesome. So hopefully I'll get to see same kind of fireworks in the Final Four and National Championship this weekend.
Sweet. You know, Coulter, as always, it was so good talking to you, and you'll have to tell me what your experience was like in the Final Four, and we'll have to catch up again, talk some more college hoops, all right?
Absolutely, anytime.
Yeah, and maybe next time we'll have to do it even before the tournament. We'll have to do it like at the start of college basketball season. I'll probably have a lot more questions to ask.
Yeah, we should do a start of the season, and we pick Final Four teams,
Madness
rolls around. We'll see how
we revisit it. Yeah. Well, Coulter, thanks for coming on, and Again, you'll have to see if you can't find those flash drives or hard drives and of those old videos. Who knows? Maybe I can use them for audio at some point. But you have a great rest of your night and enjoy your time. And you'll have to post all over social media when UConn wins the whole dang thing, all right?
Yeah, I'll hopefully be there on Monday night when the confetti drops right next to the Huskies. Yeah, be on to try to get on TV so everyone can see me up in Montana.
Yeah. Well, Coulter, I hope you're having a great rest of your night and enjoy your time down there. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Zach.